Hello, and welcome to the Great Birth Rebellion podcast, where we grapple with current research to help you get the best out of your pregnancy, birth, and postpartum journey while still challenging the dominant birth culture. I'm your host, Dr. Melanie Jackson at Melanie the Midwife, and I'm joined weekly by my co-host, Bea, from Core and Floor Restore, and this is the Great Birth Rebellion. Welcome, everybody, to this week's episode of the Great Birth Rebellion. We are coming off a massive episode last week, and Bea is back with me. We're going to talk about something that Bea actually trains people in, along with Lael Stone. We're talking about birth debriefing. Obviously, she's on top of it. She's done it herself. She's got people in her company that offer birth debriefs and postnatal debriefs. So today we're going to pick Bea's brain on birth debriefing. I think this would benefit women who are considering it, clinicians who are considering offering it or recommending it to women. And actually, you don't have to be a health professional in order to be able to help somebody birth debrief.
No, this would be a great one for partners. I think this episode, I really hope people who are pregnant listen to it, because I think birth debriefing, especially coming off the birth trauma inquiries that are happening in Australia and overseas, gets kind of put as a label in a box that only a certain amount of people, if they meet a certain criteria, need. And I think it's not just the birth trauma inquiries that have done that. I actually think it's the hospital system that's created that in the first place, because they were the first ones that really started offering this. And it was typically done if people had had what looked like on a piece of paper as a traumatic birth. And that's not the way. My definition of a birth debrief is it is very different to the system's definition of a birth debrief. And I think I really wanted to do this episode today to just provide more information to everybody out there around the importance of it, because birth is one of the most transformative events we ever go through and in our entire life. And it's huge on the mind, body, and soul. And that is just not recognized at all. It's, you know, birth is still very much about the fact that you are creating a baby, not that you are creating a mother. And every single time a woman gives birth, she becomes a new mother. And, you know, you have to grow each time you have a new baby. That new child requires a different version of you, and the new family unit requires a new version of you. And I just think that women aren't held to be able to process this transformation. And that is what I see birth debriefing really as being able to understand what you've just gone through and why, and find yourself again. Because it is, right? We get three massive transformations in our life. So the first one is when we go from girl to woman and we start to bleed. And then when we go from woman to mother and we give birth, and people will say it's not just the birth of the child. If, you know, for people that don't have babies, it can be the birth of a huge business, birth of a book, birth of something else that's really significant that requires a huge transformation. But if we're talking physiology and we're talking hormones and the body, then it's birth. And then the third and final and probably the biggest transformation that's really missed by our society is when we go through menopause. And we really, I mean, I see all three events as when we really step into our power, but that final one is that real, like, get stuffed, everybody, this is who I am, and nobody, none of you can do anything about it anymore. And I just look at those three events and what they've become, and they've really, in our culture, shifted from these events that we're meant to hold on over our bodies, and we're meant to rise up into our power and claim it. We're meant to be supported to do that more than anything, so that we can rise up and claim our power. And that all three events are body events. They're meant to be where the body takes over and rides the waves and gets through the process. And in all three of them, we've had this huge shift from honor on the body to shame and grit. and onto the medical system. So you look at girls bleeding now. I read research just recently. I think it was like 2 bleeds girls are having before they go on to some kind of contraception, right? The amount of medication that is taken around bleeds, the amount of pathologizing. I've said that wrong. Can you say that for me?
But is it pathologizing?
Pathologizing. That's it. Thank you. That happens. And I've got a webinar coming up in May with the incredible Lucy Peach, who has written Period Queen, and she does the most divine corporate and also school work with girls and women around their bleeds. But I remember being at a presentation that she did once, and, you know, she goes into schools and gets them to write all the words around what it's like to get your bleed, and they're all negative and horrible. And so, you know, this real medicalizing and handing our bodies over to the system starts in this. First event happens very much. I mean, I'm looking at my women friends now going through menopause, and the narrative is the same. Just get your uterus taken out, right? And I'm like, it's like we're going through the birth stages all over again in menopause. It's like, take the drugs, have the surgery. Take the drugs, have the surgery. Like, it feels like that is across all three. And what is being missed culturally is the beautiful power. And that's why I think I love birth debriefing so much, because if women have been robbed of their power during birth, which most have, we know that, right? Because of interventions, because of the system and the way it's set up, or just because of a true medical event where physiology didn't get to play out, I see birth debriefing as this phenomenal time to give back to women and for them to reclaim that power, to get it back in whatever way is necessary for them to process their birth. But you think about it, we go through this, the biggest life event we ever go through, and then bang, you become a mum and motherhood just takes off. Well, we live in a culture that loves to fix. And what that means is people try and make you better, and I'm saying that in inverted commas, and it's not because they're trying to be mean. It's not because they don't care, although often it can feel like that. It's more often than not because they're so deeply uncomfortable or they just don't know how to listen to hear. So we live in a culture that really doesn't know how to listen. We don't know how to listen well. We don't know how to listen to truly hear someone. And we, many of us, and not saying all of us, there's some people out there who are fantastic listeners. Some of you are listening right now going, I'm a good listener. But the whole concept of holding space for others' feelings is quite foreign for many people. And so women have got these massive stories, and they're just coming out in little snippets. So, you know, I'll see people and they're like, oh, I went to the physiotherapist and I spent the whole session crying. Or, you know, years later, you and I see it, mothers, mother-in-laws at birth or in postpartum still reliving their story. And I would love so much for the older generations to start coming to this service as well and accessing it, because you take your birth story with you to your grave, and the research demonstrates that now. And this, I think that alone shows how big this story is and that it needs to be heard, and the power in being heard. There is so much joy and capacity that we get when we are fully heard and just listened to and validated. And I think, you know, you started off being like, anyone can do this. Yeah, we could all get a hell of a lot better at our listening towards people that we love and care for. And so, you know, I just think the birth debrief is one of the most powerful things we can give people post-birth as they enter motherhood. And I don't think one session is enough. I think people really need multiple sessions to fully just be heard. And it's not, I have so many women that turn up and they're like, oh, you know, on paper my birth doesn't look that bad, or I know other people have had it worse. And it's like, doesn't matter what anybody else's experience is. Your experience is valid. And there's so many, you know, different descriptions around that as well. But I've had multiple women come to me just to be heard about their ecstatic birth. I've had women come just to have me hold space so they can read their own notes by their private midwife, and they've had an amazing home birth. And it's like, that's what it is. It's all of it. And it's being able to understand yourself more than anything. I think, you know, there's this, oh, I just think people don't think too much about it, really. They get pregnant and they get caught up in the fact they have to give birth. People don't really understand that they turn up to birth with all their stories. And so when you're in a transformation phase, you are going to hit vulnerability. And when you hit vulnerability, I mean, moving away from that, or moving through that, really not away, but moving through that and coming out the other side, that's where the power gets claimed, right? But when we hit vulnerability, all our stories, all our wounds get exposed. And so I had what many people would describe, not all, 100% not all, but what a lot of people would describe as a very amazing first birth. It was completely physiological, completely undisturbed, no interventions. And, well, I had active management of third stage. That was an intervention, but that was by choice at that point of my life. And I walked away from that birth with three really big wounds that all reflected the wounds that I carry with me throughout my whole life. And then those wounds continue to unravel in motherhood. And this is where I really see the true power of debriefing, is if you can understand yourself through your birth and meet with yourself, then you can see the parts of you that really don't serve you and that will enable, or that require, some energy, some love, and some shifting. Because if they didn't serve you in birth, they sure as hell aren't going to serve you in motherhood. So to give you an example of that, I thought that I had failed during my first birth. Now, I was a very high achiever, and I'm someone that would tell myself I failed no matter what. So this failure piece has run throughout. It's a thread that's been throughout my whole life. So it was always going to show up for me in birth, regardless of where or how I birthed. So with my amazing birth, I decided that I failed because I didn't breathe my baby out. I absolutely roared my baby out. I swore my baby out. I was overcome with, you know, this tension in my body. I wasn't just chilled and relaxed. And I'd been at a birth and witnessed a midwife giving birth, and she just was like, you know, I can feel the head. The baby's here. I'm catching my baby. And I remember walking away being like, that's how I want to birth. Never in that time did I meet with myself and go, B, you don't do things calmly. That's not you. You're a roarer. You like to swear. You like to be loud and vocal and big. You're not going to be quiet and small when you're birthing, because you're not quiet and small in any other aspect of your life. And this is a big one, because women making noise is huge, because when we're trained to be good and we're trained to be quiet. So you are good if you are quiet. That is a stem of being good, right? And so many women, and this is a work I do a lot with women, is actually feeling comfortable and safe enough to make noise. And so many women in birth can be horrified by the noises that they make and their body needs to make. And so that failure piece for me was there in birth, and then was it there in motherhood. Like, it really just consumed me. I could do no right in my eyes in motherhood. Everything I was doing was failing. And if I had had someone to really hold me in that early postpartum and help me understand my birth the way I do now and understand myself the way I do now, I mean, that wasn't my journey, and I totally trust that what has happened to me has needed to happen exactly as it did, but our whole family unit would have looked very, very different, and it would have been much more enjoyable and The transformation of that first birth would have been completed a lot sooner. And I think for most women, because they never get their stories heard or unpacked, the transformation never gets complete. And we never get to really pause and reflect and be able to understand what pieces are there to help us. And I do see that as, and it sounds as horrible and sick and awful, but that is what I love about birth trauma, is that if people are supported and loved and nourished enough, they can heal, and not only heal, but heal and rise up and get what they deserved and were originally destined for but were robbed of in their birth.
Yeah, and trauma can be incredibly transformative, just like birth can, if, as you said, we're held and helped properly.
Yeah, you have to be supported, because I mean, I've had huge trauma in my life, and I mean, it doesn't feel like any of what we've just said is possible in, unless you've been through it before and you're like, okay, I know this, I know I'm going to get out, I know where to go, I know how to get helped. But I think for most women, birth and postpartum can often be the first time they meet with big trauma. And so, and I'm just saying here, it doesn't have to be big trauma in birth at all, but we meet with it and then we don't know where to go. We don't know how to be supported in it. We don't know who to support us in it. And so then we just keep unraveling in this snowball that feels like it's never going to stop.
And it's a product of, I think this we're seeing is a product of the medicalization of birth. And we've fragmented it and chopped it up and made it medical without realizing that these are people, and it's a physiological process that needs nurturing. And so when you completely take it out of the social context and into the medical context, the idea of debriefing a medical event is foreign to start with. And so I think that's why it's not on the medical radar. And you mentioned early on that your definition of birth debriefing is really different to what any, like, a hospital would think, because, and you're right, because I was doing some reading about the idea of debriefing, and a lot of papers will just talk about the statistical benefit and the fact that they're offering it. They don't really talk about how it's properly done. And then it becomes part of a tick list, like you said, in hospitals, where they go, right, that woman had forceps delivery, therefore she qualifies for some kind of...
Yeah, there becomes a criteria. And then women present to me with that, like, oh, you know, I didn't have these things. And it's like, nah, no, your story is worthy of being heard. Regardless. And so, yeah, the medical system has kind of made it this thing of, like, if you have this, and I've seen the opposite, like, if you have this, then you're worthy of having a debrief. And I've seen the complete opposite happen, where women are being told, well, your birth was really traumatic, you need to have a debrief, and them being like, nah, like, that felt fine, what do you mean? And then confusion. And I've definitely had women come to me confused about whether they should be traumatized or not. And or because of what family has said and or what health professionals have said. And, you know, I know we're talking here about the medical system, but I also think the reason this has gotten so lost is cultural. We have taken away all ceremony and ritual around being a woman. You know, we are these cyclic beings that are meant to sit together. We are. We're meant to sit together as women. And whether you like that or not, you don't have to like it. It doesn't make you less of a woman if you don't like sitting with other women. But historically, women have all hung out and been together and sat with each other and supported each other, especially during these years of transformative years, so the bleed and birth. And so, you know, this is a medical system thing that has occurred as well, but it's also very, very much cultural. You know, I talk to women all the time around their imprints, their belief systems around receiving support. Many of us don't comfortably receive support, let alone identify our own needs and ensure our needs get met. And then we have this whole belief system around what being a mother is and what being a good mother is, in inverted commas. And most of that is centered around self-sacrifice. So why would you spend any time for yourself in postpartum to help you process something? That would be selfish. And that's not what I'm saying, right? Please don't misinterpret me there. But that is the cultural belief system. But we also have a huge grit mentality, which is just suck it up and keep going. And if you can't, then you are weak or vulnerable or not good enough. And that plays into it too. Like, oh, if I need help or I need a birth debrief, then I'm not coping. And then people will see that I'm not coping. And that's not the case. And so I really wanted to do this episode today to start changing the narrative around this, to see birth as the phenomenal transformation where you will most of the time lose yourself in that. We're meant to. You're in a transformative state. You're going to question everything. This is a period where we do lose that previous identity because you're no longer woman, you're mother. And so you're trying to refine yourself in this new role. And I really see unpacking our birth as such a powerful tool to help us rediscover who we now are, because you are a new person. You have to be a new person, not just because of what you've been through, but because your child or children, if you've had multiples, are requiring a shift in you. They're asking you to step into this new role and be their mother. And they're asking of you what is required to mother them.
So we're talking about birth debriefing. Let's take it right back to square one. What is it? If it's not just like, what is it? Because I have yet to find a helpful description that it will tell
and
me.
This is the tricky thing, right? Because it depends who you ask. Like if you ask the hospital system, I mean, and I've had so many women that have had those kind of birth debriefs and then come to me, and then so many people who've done our mentorship, my birth debriefing mentorship, be like, oh, the people that do them don't like doing them. And, you know, so I think out there in the world, the belief that a birth debrief is to answer questions, right? To simply this process where you go, what happened? Why did this happen? And so it's a process of gathering more information. And with a lot of love, I say this, but the birth debriefing experience in the system for many people, from what I've heard of them coming to me, can feel like the tick box or an ass covering event. So we're going to do this because we're worried that you're going to sue us. So we're trying to give you some more information. And I understand how that may be triggering for people in the system. I'm definitely saying that this is the comments that I'm receiving. People feel like they go, it's just so that the hospital doesn't feel like they're going to get sued or can be sued. And it feels like a blame passing for many women. That's what they feel like. The blame of the birth gets passed from the system back onto the woman. I'm not saying that happens all the time, but anecdotally, that is what I am hearing from people who have these experiences.
And I hear what you're saying with that, because, you know, when I take my clients into hospital who need to transfer into hospital, sometimes things happen that the women aren't happy about, and we go back to the hospital for some kind of meeting or debrief with them. What I've witnessed from those meetings, and I go with the women and I encourage them to write things down and be really explicit about what they want to say and talk to these people about. And the people, I think they really want to help but just don't know how. And then what it becomes is a way for them to justify to the woman what they did. So they'll say, oh, but we were doing that because we needed to, you know, like, it was the end of the day and people were going home, so we needed to speed up that process. And what they forget is to actually listen to what the woman is trying to tell them.
And they spend the whole time trying to justify the action, their actions to the woman, to kind of say to her, we didn't mean to upset you. We didn't mean to hurt you. We didn't mean to traumatize you. What the woman actually wants to tell you is her experience.
Well, people want to be heard. The woman wants to be heard, and as do the care providers. And this is what I was saying before, is we don't listen very well. We don't listen well in the system. We don't listen very well outside the system. We don't listen well to our partners. We don't listen well to our friends. We live in a culture that listens to fix. And we also, and I think this is super important, this is just an observation of our culture, we don't like mistakes. So if we lived in a world that really valued mistakes and saw them as an incredible opportunity to learn and grow and just honor each other, oh, could you imagine? Like, my whole body just hearing that is like, yes, bring that world on. But we don't. We live in a system that has a court of law that doesn't like mistakes and punishes. So we live in a very authoritarian world that came with the pet behavior paradigm. And that is what most of our system is built on. And this is why we have such a high fear-based practice in the medical world. Because, and I'm not saying it's right or wrong, yeah, it's just an observation. And I've worked in cultures where we've had this, and I've worked in cultures overseas where that didn't exist. There was no blame. There was a true trusting of life, and things just happened, and everybody was doing the very best they could with what they had. We don't have that belief system here. We don't go, oh, everyone's doing the very best they can with what they have. This hasn't felt good. Let's just honor all the feelings and then see how we can improve. We feel the need to blame and have punishment and rewards around all of that. Now, just a whole lot of love if you're feeling really triggered by this, because if you have had a birth where mistakes have happened, but typically most people just actually want to be heard and heard with complete empathy and validation. But because of that, I think it's a really important part of our culture to help people understand perhaps why things unfold the way they do, which is typically justification of actions. Now, information is super important. Information can enable us to feel much more powerful. And so people gaining more information post-birth can be important. I don't find it's the biggest thing, though. I think the biggest thing are our feelings and what we make things mean and how we feel around them. So from all my years doing this and teaching, and we know this from research, it's not that the person had a cesarean that was unplanned or had the forceps. It's what was said around it, how they were treated, if they felt heard, if they felt supported. So if those themes are there in birth, not feeling supported, feeling like they've failed, and then they go into this tick box kind of debrief that just exacerbates that, what they're left with is actually they're being re-traumatized by the same system that their trauma was held in. And I actually find, and I just want to say, I hold space for debriefs across the whole spectrum, right? So I listen to people who've had free births. I listen to people who've had home births with private midwives, publicly funded home births, MGP care, GP shared care, fragmented public system care, and private obstetrics. I listen to everyone across the spectrum. It's been one of the most phenomenal experiences for me as a midwife. And the charge points, the grief, the anger, they're there across the whole spectrum. Yes, we know that they're higher in different models of care, more so with our fragmented models. So private midwifery, private obstetrics have lower birth trauma. But I do believe that people need to be heard outside their model of care, away from their healthcare professional, because it really enables them to unravel their story properly. So if people are going back with their care provider into the system where the trauma was, they're never going, unless those people involved have done a lot of training and are providing really beautiful trauma-informed care, they're not going to have their needs met in the process.
So, but if the woman needs answers, obviously there's a point, there might be a point in their story where they're like, I want to know why that clinician made that decision at that point in order for them to process a particular point.
Sometimes I really, in all my years of debriefing, birth debriefing is not about that. It's not about one decision that was made, or sometimes it can be, but it really isn't. It's the bigger stuff. It's what happens. So trauma is not the event. It's what happens inside of us as a response to the event. This is where you can have five people have the exact same birth and their experience of it will be very, very, very unique. In all, it's exactly the same. You have five totally different experiences. So trauma is what happens inside of us as a response. And so it's very rare that it's actually about the one thing that happened. And I think this is where the power of birth debriefing has gotten lost, because system birth debriefing actually becomes about that. It becomes about, we did this because of this. This is why we're doing this. That's why we did that. I'm so sorry that happened. It was because there was a shift change. And it becomes about explanation rather than true listening and unpacking. And so there's no processing that really occurs in that, just gaining some information. A little bit, it can help people go, okay, I understand that a little bit better now and I understand their actions, but they're still not understanding the trauma, which is what happened inside of them. So do they feel uncared for? Do they feel not supported? Do they feel like they've been assaulted? What is it? And does it connect to other things? Because more often than not, it does. It connects to the rest of our story. And that's where we start to really unravel, and that's where people start to really shift and heal. So my definition of a birth debrief is that space is held for you to get what you need out of that birth, to pull out the lessons and unravel. And before you do that, we always say you've got to name it to tame it. You've got to feel it to heal it. There has to be, before you start to unravel and understand and fully process, there needs to be space for the feelings. So I always say you can't think when you have feelings. That the feelings part of the brain needs to take over first. And so there has to be, the first step always has to be space for the feelings. And we're not very good at feeling our feelings as adults because we've been deeply conditioned not to feel them. So a big part of birth debriefing is actually guiding people back into their body. And I see this over and over and over again, that most people's bodies are actually stuck in the trauma still. And this is going to be big. Some of you are going to have huge aha moments, especially when there's been huge interventions like a cesarean under general anesthetic, emergency Caesar, epidural, PPH, so postpartum hemorrhage, or baby being separated. When I work with people's bodies and I start to see their stories and help them unravel, what I find is their bodies are actually still stuck in that traumatic event. And so I will say to people, do you feel like you've been in a sympathetic nervous system state, so a survival state since that moment? And they'll be like, oh my God, yeah, yeah, I have. I'm still, my body is still back there. And so a lot of birth debriefing that I do is reconnecting, bringing balance between mind and body again, and trying to, because what often happens when we have trauma is we switch into the brain, and we see this postpartum, right? People just continue to go over their births over and over and over again. What could I have done differently? What could somebody else have done differently? And this is what I think the system kind of facilitates women getting stuck in, that because it's that information, right? And so that's the intellect. Whereas it wasn't just the mind that went through the birth, the body did as well. And so a lot of the work I do is actually trying to get people, if it's safe for them, to come back into their body and process what's there. And the way the body remembers, so our body has a memory. That's why people when you hear a song, your whole body fills up with different emotions. It's why when you're pregnant again, you go back into the birth space, your body responds. Our body remembers things very differently to the mind. And so birth debriefing for me is about listening to both and trying to balance the mind and the body, so the intellect and the intuition again, because motherhood and birth, they're body events predominantly. They're meant to be events that are guided by the body's functioning and intuition. And when you lose that, especially through trauma, and you shift back into that intellect, motherhood can feel really tricky and really conflicting, because you're not actually being guided by the part of you that's meant to guide you for motherhood. And so birth debriefing, yeah, it's about you being able to tell your story, to be fully heard, to have space for all the feelings to be felt. So the anger, the jealousy, the grief, the sadness, the disappointment, the joy, the pride, because all our feelings can coexist. And then to really bring balance between mind and body again, so you can actually be yourself in this new role and unravel the pieces that are there that this new role requires of you. So it's a huge process. It's not just, oh, this is why this happened. And I think that's why people are like, oh, I don't need one because I understand my birth, or, you know, perhaps they think it has to be with that care provider because they need to ask those questions. But it's not. It's deep psychological and deep body processing.
That would take some real emotional intelligence, whoever's sitting with you for your birth debrief. It's a big human ask to sit with and listen to people's feelings and let them be fully expressed. And you'll feel it as a parent when your child is fully expressing their emotion, how we maybe want to tame it and shut it down a little bit and make it a more of an adult expression of anger or some kind of emotion. And so I think it takes us a real conscious effort from a person to not shut down a feeling and just sit with it.
Yeah, well, I mean, you have to do your own work. So the mentorship that Lael and I run, and I'll be running a new mentorship that's going to go over 12 months all around intuitive care, you have to know your own story. And we say in this work, you can only take someone as far as you've been yourself. The reason I get better and better and better at doing this is because I get better and better and better at being a human the way I was biologically designed, which was to feel. So, you know, you said you instinctively want to shut down your children's feelings sometimes. That's intellectual. That's conditioned, because our feelings are a part of homeostasis. And our bodies, and if you watch children, our children know how to co-regulate on their own in a way that feels good for them, but we've been shut down. So, for example, like humming. Humming is a phenomenal thing that you can do for your nervous system. I watch my children when they're out of balance, they naturally do it. I have never told them to do it. They've discovered it through their own body. But what do we get told? Don't hum, don't make noise, be quiet, sit still. When my child's processing something big, he jumps, he moves. He moves his whole body. And I'm like, okay, he's processing something. I've never told him to move his body. He's just doing it instinctively. Now, I would have been shut down for that as a kid, because he's 7 and he still jumps around. But that wouldn't have been, my mom used to say, you're a fart in the bottle. You're a fart in the bottle. You're a fart in the bottle. And it's like, yeah, my body needs to move. That's how I process things. That's what feels good. So, yeah, I often, you know, when I hold a session for somebody at the start, I teach about actually crying, because most of us only superficially cry. We stay at the top. We talk through our tears. We just keep talking. We apologize. The amount of people that pay me really good money to come and speak to me and for me to listen, and then they apologize for crying.
Yeah.
Right? It's like, you don't have to apologize for being a human being. There's no agenda with my birth debriefs, but if you cry, you're feeling, that's epic. Mm. But we talk through, we apologize, and we stay very, very superficial in quite a protective state, because it more often than not has never been safe for us to fully drop down and cry. When I have a good cry, my whole body shakes, right? Mm. I properly shake and I feel amazing afterwards. That's because our tears have cortisol in them. crying and laughter are built-in mechanisms, just like weaning and pooing. They are there to get rid of waste and bring us back into balance. But we've been told, don't cry, right? And we've trained to not feel. And there's beautiful research on this now. And so a lot of the birth debriefing space is holding it so someone can actually feel. And you can only hold that if you've been there yourself. So our mentorship is big. It's raw.
I want to know about the mentorship, because train people to be able to sit with people for birth debriefs.
Yeah. Yeah.
So when you do that training, I mean, can you give a bit of an overview? Like, what do you teach people? What do they need to learn in order to be able to offer effective debriefing sessions?
Yeah. So they need, it is a whole lot that we do around feelings and being able to feel safe yourself in feelings, knowing what vulnerability feels like, knowing how to sit with that, knowing anger. We don't know healthy expression of anger. Anger is the most, one of the most divine feelings. I honor it just as much as I honor joy and love, because it's there to teach us where our boundaries have been crossed and where there's injustices. But for the majority of us, we know aggression or suppression. We don't know healthy anger. And many women are scared to be angry. They're scared of healthy expression of anger, yet we expect this of our children, right? But, you know, we're expecting so much of these younger generations, but they're not seeing us model it. And so I had once, it was one of the most beautiful sessions, and the woman threw a 25-minute tantrum. And I just sat there and held it, and it was absolutely divine. Now, she'd done some work with me. It wasn't her first session with me. She'd done a fair bit of work with me to feel safe to do that. And I run mum rage exercise sessions now to help us actually know how to be with anger and how to understand it. Because sometimes it's there because of the present boundary or injustice has been crossed, but often it's there as a mask for sadness and powerlessness.
I love a good tantrum.
Yeah, they're really needed, especially post-birth. If there's been an injustice in the birth, there needs to be the space for you to feel your anger around it. And I've had many people come to me who've had different kinds of therapy around their birth, but there was never the space for anger.
Mm.
And actually, that's what they need to feel first before they can drop into the grief. I mean, so much of the way I do birth debriefing has come about super intuitively. I've always been an intuitive practitioner. It's, I think, what made me an epic midwife, and it's why I struggled so much in the system, because there wasn't often the space for the intuition. And this is hugely cultural. We live in a world that values the intellect, that values the prefrontal cortex, and really doesn't think about the rest of the brain, let alone the body. And I think as we really shift into being more connected with ourselves, this is where the struggle with systems often comes in, because systems require us to really disconnect from ourselves in order for the system to work. And especially with birth and parenting, there has to be some kind of disconnection for it to feel okay. But I think our biggest power comes from connection to self, especially as a woman and as a mother. Because that, when you are connected to self, you know you're enough and you trust your inner dialogue, which it's always there. I just want to say that. It's always there. The body's wisdom is so frigging cool. It just gets ignored. And I think, you know, I mean, I look at the way I do birth debriefing, and it's exactly the same way I started Core and Floor, all about do you, listen to yourself, do what you need. So there's no agenda with a birth debrief. It goes wherever the person needs it to go. It really is about somebody getting their needs met. And so if they turn up and they're like, B, I need all the information, then great, I'll provide all the information. And sometimes birth debriefs are super intellectual, and other times they're in the body, and other times they're a mixture of both. So it's, I think, you know, it's really just emotional support, what we offer, what my team and I offer is emotional support throughout it all. And you don't have to be pregnant. You can still be trying to conceive to get that support. And I really I love it when women turn up pregnant, because often what presents to us in birth actually presents to us a lot early on. And if we're open to it and we want to work with it, you can really shift some of the big wounds and stories before the birth. And that, when I work with people that are willing to do stuff in that time, oh, it's just magical. Because, yeah, anytime we do birth debriefs and we unpack stories that are there, the evidence around for them is there during the trying to conceive in the pregnant period too. So you don't need to have had a birth to come to us and be emotionally supported. We really can start working through this stuff in pregnancy. When we really think about, we haven't been held as women throughout our entire life. And so often what comes up is our relationship with our mums, perhaps our fathers, siblings, especially sisters, and the experiences that we've had around our body. So our first bleed, sexual education, intimacy, contraception, pap smears, colposcopies, all of these things, previous hospital admissions, all of this stuff gets held in the body. And our pelvic space is so sacred, but it holds so, and not but, and it holds so much story. And that's often what comes up for people too. It can actually be something that perhaps you think is quite minor, but there, like the amount of women that go, this is really silly, but this is what it's brought up. And it's like, it is not silly at all. That is your beautiful body remembering a story that it is still holding on to. And we want to work with that to shift it and move it. So body image stuff comes up all the time. It's huge. Just the relationship and connection to our own body. The amount of women I work with postpartum who haven't looked at, let alone touched their vulva, it's big. And this is actually what got me into birth debriefing. I was working with people with core and pelvic floor issues, and I noticed that when there was trauma there, they couldn't connect at all or very well to their core and pelvic floor. And I was like, okay, the body stuff can only take us so far. We have to start listening to the stories. And so I started listening to the trauma that the body was holding, and then it's just grown.
And is that the trick? Because you said it's about emotionally, birth debriefing is about emotionally supporting a person so that they feel safe to feel and express their emotions around an event. And so what's the skill in that? How do you, because we live in an emotionally stuck society. I mean, my husband's had to do so much work. He still to this day, as he turned 40 yesterday, still to this day has trouble describing what he's feeling. And so you can witness his frustration and sounds that he's making and behaviors that he's doing and how he's responding to people. And if you say, what's going on for you right now? He says, I don't know. And he's never been taught to go to think, am I feeling frustration? Am I feeling anger? Am I tired? Am I hungry? He's not able to do that. And I think that's really common.
Oh, it's hugely common. And it's what so many of us who are trying to parent differently are now starting to know about ourselves and starting to do, but it's really hard. You have to be held in it. You have to be supported in it. It's not like one day you can just be like, okay, I'm going to be safe with my emotions now. Like, I've had to chant, I'm safe to feel, I'm safe to feel. My husband isn't scary. Like, in terms of being able to feel my feelings around my husband. And, you know, I'm going to be really gendered and generalized here, and I know I'm not 100% right, and I'm being very general. But typically, growing up for me, the belief system I got was it's safe for girls to be hormonal. So we're allowed to get all emotional and crazy if we're about to bleed. But if you're a bloke and if you're a man and you cry, then that is a threat to your existence because boys don't cry. Right? That was the generation that I grew up in. Boys don't cry. And a big one also was children should be seen and not heard. Right? So I know things are changing. I know we're trying to get better. But if we haven't seen it, if we didn't grow up watching adults healthily express their feelings, It is very hard. It very much is about experimentation and holding yourself in it. And that's hard. We're not meant to do this on our own. We're actually meant to be held. So happy birthday, Dan. That's very exciting. And yeah, what he's experiencing, like I love that he actually has the awareness that he doesn't know, because most people's trauma is actually they don't even have the awareness that they've had connection trauma and that they can't feel very well.
And can someone like that then? Can someone who is disconnected from their own feelings, are they in a position to sit with someone for a birth debrief? Because it's common, even for women.
Yeah. Not in the way that we hold space for birth debriefs. I would say there's a lot of people who would argue that. So like a psychologist, for example, they don't have to do their own inner work to become a psychologist. It's a degree that they get, right? You can be a midwife without having a baby, for example. I think to truly hold somebody and to do this kind of compassionate work, you don't have to have gone all the way, and it's definitely a process, and you keep peeling the layers off. So, I don't think in the big scheme of the world people would answer that question the same as I have, but certainly for me, if you are going to hold space for somebody, you have to know what that feels like. And in order to be really empathetic and to be able to hold it, and when I hold space for people's feelings, it doesn't affect me at all. I am just a beautiful, open space where I can really just hold it. And it doesn't impact me, because sometimes people, they bring really big stories, and then often they'll apologize. And it's like, I am trained to do this. I can do this very comfortably. It doesn't impact me anymore. It certainly did at the start, and that's another thing that we teach, is how to be able to hold it and cleanse and look after yourself, because you are hearing really big stories often, not all the time though. Mm. So yeah, the mentorship is as much about professional growth as it is personal.
Mm. And I think that, yeah, and I was asking, I interrupted the answer to my original question with another question. So when you are emotionally holding someone, is it as simple as just listening, or is there more to it?
It depends where the person's at and what they need. So I always go where the person wants to go, and where it feels safe for them, and I'm constantly observing as well as listening, because the last thing you want is for someone to re-traumatize during the session. And so it's all about keeping them safe, and I'm constantly like checking in, offering things. Would you like to go here? Would you like to go there? But typically what comes up in most sessions when people work with me is previous trauma, and not just previous trauma like you would think, like abuse or something like that. It's often not feeling supported, for example. Who does that remind you of? Typically it's a mother, partner. The thread can run very, very strong. And so a lot of the work, I do a lot of inner child work in birth debriefs as well, because so many of us actually labor and birth from the younger parts of us. We don't labor and birth from those really anchored, centered parts of us, especially for the first birth. Maybe in second and subsequent births we do, but typically we labor from wounded parts of us because we're in that vulnerable state. And so it's unraveling that. So yeah, the biggest comments I get are, wow, I didn't expect to go that deep and for all of that to come up, and I've shifted and moved more here with you today than I've done with other professionals in multiple sessions. Because
how do you do that? Like, how do you?
It's a skill. That's why we call it the art of birth debriefing. It's a skill, and we provide mentorship to keep going. And that's why I really want to offer a 12-month mentorship, because for everybody, because I think chiropractors, osteos, physios, we had some of them on the last course, really need to be able to hold this space, because, and this is the tricky thing, postpartum isn't owned by anyone and it's not typically publicly funded. And so people are going to different services. There needs to be space to hold space for our stories and our trauma, because that's often what's happening in these sessions, right? People's bodies are being met with and the stories are starting to unravel. And I've had sessions with some osteos where I've gone back into big trauma, for example, being resuscitated. So I was killed and resuscitated when I was 12. And I've gone back to those moments and I've needed to actually be holding them for my body to process, because my body's still holding on to this trauma and not being held in it. And then just walking away actually really friggin' stuck and still in that resuscitative state. And so, yeah, I think the intuitive care mentorship that I will launch is going to be for anyone who's really willing to meet people where they're at and hold it for people. And it does have to be 12 months, because it is a huge professional and personal development. We're leveling up as humans to be able to hold it for other humans. So, yeah, you're going to learn how to feel. You're going to learn how to actually trust your intuition again, or be guided by it more if you're tapping into it. And we need to be supported to be able to start doing these shifts in our healthcare and holding people in that. Imagine if midwives could do that in the moment. Imagine if obstetricians could do that, like in the moment of birth, like actually, and that's what I see so more often than not, is people disconnecting and disassociating. Imagine if we can bring people back into their body and listen to what their body's trying to say in that moment. I mean, I think so many people's bodies would be like, we need to get out of here. This is not the right environment for us.
But if you're seeing anyone, so your postnatal physiotherapist or your osteopath or the GP, like, so anybody that you're interacting, because I'm hearing that these skills are actually genuine human life skills.
They're human life skills. And we really just need much better human skills to help us connect, to shift it. And I just think, what a wonderful world we're able to create. Like, and it is, I mean, it sounds really basic, but it's not. It's hard. It's hard.
As you were talking about integrating different health modalities with this idea of being able to birth debrief, or to just debrief with people or sit with people's feelings, I was reminded of two circumstances where I felt that from my own health professionals, or they weren't even health professionals. Oh, can I tell the two stories? Just highlights how it can be integrated and done in the moment. So the first one, I was with my osteopath who I went to see. So I worked for the Australian College of Midwives for a short period of time on a short-term contract for about 8 months. And this story is no reflection on that, on the ACM, on the Australian College of Midwives. But I was younger and hadn't experienced this kind of organization before, and genuinely felt bullied by one of my superior workmates. It wasn't systemic through the ACM at all, and it's, I don't want it to reflect that, but I didn't understand what was happening because I've never been bullied before. I didn't understand what it felt like, until I spoke to people about what was happening. And somebody said to me, hey, that's not right. That's bullying. And I was like, what? They said, you're being bullied. Whoa. Okay. And I went to my osteopath basically because I was so stressed. And she put her hands on me. And then she took her hands off about 2 minutes later. And she said, what happened to you? I was like, what do you mean? And I had not spoken to her about this. I just went because my body was so wound up from the emotionality of the whole thing. And I went hoping she could push a magic button, and she put her hands on me and immediately felt something in my body and said, what happened to you? And I said, and I told her, she said, it's in your body. It's sitting there. That's all it is. It's not your body. It's your emotion. And I spoke to her about what was happening. And by the end of the appointment, felt so much better, but she'd hardly done any osteopathy.
Yeah.
I didn't need osteopathy. I needed someone
to be heard.
Yes. Mm. And, you know, after spending months being shut down for trying to talk about this circumstance, one person acknowledged that this was hurting me and that, yeah, and I was like, oh, feels so good after that appointment. And I was like, wait, I didn't have an osteopathic appointment. She just listened, but she knew what I needed.
Mm. Yeah, because she could feel it on a nervous system level. And that, I mean, that's, there's a beautiful book called Your Body Keeps the Score that talks all about the hidden costs of not feeling our feelings. And so most of the work I do now is around this because, you know, and Gabor Mate talks a lot about autoimmune disease and how the majority of people who have autoimmune disease are women and what kind of loads they're carrying in their bodies. The interesting thing with that is that you could see it, right? Like you could see that you'd had this experience, you were able, somebody was able to give you some information that then landed for you and you were like, oh, this is happening. And then you had the next piece of the story, which was an osteopath meeting with your body and you being able to put it all together because X, Y, and Z happened, right? It took me 25 years to realize that being bitten by a snake wasn't actually a cool story, that it was a huge trauma on my body. And so often this is what we do. We hold a different story that keeps us in a protective state, which is okay. There's nothing wrong with that. But our body is always working from a state of protection. And so often we carry these stories that aren't actually the truth of what's happening. So if you hadn't have met with that person and they hadn't have been like, hey, Mel, that's bullying, you may have just had this story of, oh, my neck's really tight because I'm really stressed at the moment.
Yeah, well, the story I was holding was maybe I'm not cut out. Maybe I'm not tough enough for this.
Yeah.
First really big kind of go at being involved in such a high level of work. And I was like, oh, maybe I'm not cut out. Maybe I can't do this. I just finished my PhD and had a baby at home. And my thoughts were, maybe I can't do this. But my other part of my brain was like, well, hang on, you've done some pretty big things, really big, hard things. Why wouldn't you be able to do this? And it wasn't until someone allowed me to talk it through. But
yeah. And that's, you know, we do that as well. That's, you know, what's actually happening is your body's got all these feelings about it, but your brain goes, oh, I'll take it from here. Thanks. I'll take it from here and I'll tell us that we can't do this, that we're not good enough. And that is because we've learned to do that. We've learned to shift back into that intellect and problem solve. And so the way our brains problem solve is either by self-blaming or blaming others. So you went into self-blame mode and went, I'm not good enough. And then when your body had the chance to be heard, actually the real story comes out, which is this doesn't feel good for me. And actually I've got a lot of feelings here around this. And I think this happens with birth over and over again. We justify it. We tell ourselves that we're lucky because our baby's alive, or we could have been worse off, or it wasn't that bad, or, you know, we got a good birth, so we can't be upset about it. But that is not the truth of what the body is holding. The body is holding a very different story. And yeah, the body remembers. You said you had two stories. What was your other one?
Oh, my other one, and I want to advocate for hairdressers to learn how to do some have some debriefing skills. I mean, I feel like they're
pretty. We had a hairdresser on our last course, actually. Yeah. She was a hairdresser and she wasn't just a hairdresser. She had lots of other skills and does like energetic stuff, and she was just phenomenal. But I was like, you got your good list. Like, she was probably the best listener of the whole group. I'm like, because you've listened for so many years.
Well, it's so important because, I mean, they're doing something. They've got to concentrate, right? And so they've got, so basically it's an opportunity and you're with someone, you're intimately with someone. And the hairdresser I went to was so incredible. The first time I went, I've got curly hair. If you haven't met me before, if you're not watching this on video, I've got very curly hair. It's very hard to find somebody who's confident in cutting curly hair. And I came to him and he said, tell me the story about your hair. And I said to him, oh, you know, my mom's got curly hair. basically my whole life, I've just learned that I need to cut it because nobody knows what to do with it. As a child, I had some really bad haircuts and I remember feeling just horrified at how they turned out, and nobody listens to me when I tell them how my hair's going to behave after it gets a cut. He poured me a cup of tea and we sat down for about 15 minutes where he listened to what has happened to me and my hair through my life. And he said, "I get it." He said, "Here's what I want to do for you." He said, I want to hedge your hair like a plant. He's like, "You've got dynamic hair. If I wet it and brush it and cut it like you would do with straight hair," he said, "it's not going to work." I said, "That's how I've been doing it. I just stand in front of the mirror and cut it based on." Anyway, and so he sat and listened to the hair story. And I said, "I'm really scared for you to cut it because I'm scared about how it's going to look and then I won't like it." And he's like, I hear that you're scared. So let's really think about this. How do you want your cut?" And then he offered me more tea. And then we sat down to do the cut and he asked me a question. He said, "So what's happening for you? What's happening for you in your life?" And I was like, "What a great question. Okay." And I left there getting an amazing haircut that I wasn't scared about. I'm really glad to pay him $90 for a haircut. And I learned about the importance of the experience of people being with you. And I learned how to apply what he did for me during my haircut, actually in my midwifery appointments, and how important it is for people to have a good experience in your presence. And he gave me a bit more time. He understood what my hair journey had been like and also understood the importance. And I just thought, mate, this guy's doing important work. You know, everybody has to look at their hair and do their hair every day. Not being happy with it, I think, is an important thing for a person. And he knew how important it was that I was happy with it. And so I learned a lot from my hairdresser. And I just want to share that it doesn't have to be, if you're listening and thinking, "Oh my gosh, could I offer people debriefing sessions?" Yes, because you don't have to be a healthcare professional. You could offer debriefing to your friends, and I think people wouldn't even know that they've just had a good experience with you because you've allowed them to debrief.
It's just being an epic human, like that hairdresser. I mean, I listen to that story and go, there is somebody who is passionate about what they're doing. They're meant to be doing it and they love it. Like, I have a hairdresser who is all about the experience. She has a welcome ceremony. She does extra long massages. She has all these little extra touches that she does. And I remember one day just going there and being like, just having all these feelings that needed to be felt. And she sat and massaged my hand and I just cried.
Yeah.
Cried and I cried and I cried. And really, it's just about being a human more than anything.
And do you know who else has done it with another time? So all the stories now are coming out of the times where I've been with people who have been able to sit with people's emotions and how important it is. But when we sold the house that we built.
You know what story you're going to tell.
And I felt so emotionally attached to that house. It was where I had my two babies. It was where, you know, I love that house, but it was too big for us. We'd outgrown the garden. It was time to move on. And we had a miscarriage for our third pregnancy. And I'd saved what had come out with that miscarriage. It could, you know, that obviously there was a little baby in there and blood. And we had a burial ceremony under the tree that was my absolute favorite tree, that I literally bought the whole property just to own this tree. And so we buried the baby there. And I felt sad to leave because I was like, no, I'm gonna be leaving my baby under that tree. And so I decided to get this huge jar and just dig out a whole bunch of the soil that was there under the tree where we'd buried the baby. And it was, and I'd put it in this massive jar. And as I was sitting there doing that and I was crying over it and, you know, and just feeling the whole moment, the people who I'd hired to clean the house before the next new people moved in, the people who had bought it, they started coming down the stairs, and the owner of the company she saw me and she said, oh, this house is really important to you, isn't it? And I said, yeah, but actually I'm crying because of this thing, you know, like I had this huge jar. I was like, there's my babies in here. And anyway, I was absolutely just overwhelmed. And I said, you don't have to stay here with me. You can just go down. I'm going to be here for a while. Like I'd planned to just sit there and cry for ages. She said, no, it's okay. I'll stay. And she just sat next to me on the step, complete stranger, and sat with me while I cried. And I didn't know her, but I felt like she was comfortable. She's like, yeah, that's all right. I'm here for this. And I was like, mate, this is an important skill. She's a cleaner, but man, she made a difference, a massive difference to how I could process my emotions that day. So I guess, I mean, I want to put out there that Bea's going to make this training available. And
we've got another intensive in October that we'll be running in Melbourne, and then I'll have the 12 months. But, yeah, it's human skills. Really, you don't have to be a healthcare professional. I would love more healthcare professionals to do it and to have this kind of skill. And I love that with the cleaner. There's a beautiful children's book, if you haven't heard of it. It's called The Rabbit Listened. The Rabbit Listened by Corey Dorfield. And it's about all these animals that come up and try to fix in all the different ways. So make the child laugh, make the child forget, make the child fix it, make the child angry, all this stuff. And then the rabbit just comes, and the rabbit's very much like your cleaner and just sits and lets the child do exactly what they need to do. It's the most beautiful, beautiful book. We definitely brought it for ourselves to help us learn how to do it. But, yeah, my children have been phenomenal teachers in this work, but really just women.
Yeah.
Women have been, and partners. I have sat in sessions where partners have held the most incredible space, and I love when couples turn up to a debrief together because they're able to witness what it's like as well. And, yeah, because the debrief, it can be so, so big, and then you kind of leave it and then you have to go back to life. And so it can be really nice to have somebody there with you during the process to understand what you've actually just been through. It was the same with our mentorship, right? Like everyone did it and it's like, okay, back to your normal life. Like no one wanted to leave. And everyone's like, can we do another intensive? Can we like do, everyone's always, and then when we ran, this is the second one we've run, everyone from the first one was like, can we come again? Can we just come and hang out? Because it's just, it is. It's magical. Like it's a beautiful, beautiful course. It's just so well balanced between intellect and intuition and professional development and personal. And yeah, it's pretty magical. And I'm looking forward to the 12-month one. That will be online because there's lots of people in the States and stuff that really want to work with me too. So I've been sitting on it for a while, and I've just said that I'm going to do it on a podcast. So I better hurry up and get it sorted.
How do people book in for the October session?
That's on motheration.com, my business with Lael.
If you want to know when that's coming out, guys, get on the mailing list for the Great Birth Rebellion, because there's a mailing list and every week we send out an email which has all the resources for the current episode and any information for what's coming up for Bea and I. And so you don't miss anything. And so what I'll do is make sure that we send out an email when it's all live. And so if you're interested in Bea's offerings, it's motheration.com.
Just motheration.au. But yeah, does that answer all your questions? Do you have any others?
No, that answers my questions that I had, because this is just really taking it home to people that it's a life skill, not necessarily a professional skill that you need to have. Like you're particular type of person, or you've done particular conscious kind of work to be able to sit in a space like that. And then also to let people know, if you feel like you're not a great person for people to debrief with, that's good information.
Yeah. And I mean, it's tricky, right? Because systems are offering it now, and people, like I hear a lot of doctors are just made to do it. because of their role.
I mean, but if they know, they think, right, actually, I don't have these skills. That's still insightful. And either you go and get the skills and work on that, commit to making sure you've got somewhere to refer people on, knowing that it's outside of your particular skill set. Like, I think if you haven't, if you're not in a position to be able to do the emotional work on yourself, to be able to offer it in a healthful way, in a way that's going to actually help women work through it, then acknowledge that. Sit with the idea that it's okay at this point that I don't have this skill, because at least you're not going to try and do something that you don't know how to do. That would be my last final offering. Any final words, B, before we wrap up?
Everyone's worthy of having their story heard, no matter what. And if you take anything away from this podcast today, please just spread that message that birth is this huge transformative event, and as is everything that surrounds it. And everybody is worthy of taking up some space in that time and really being heard and unraveling themselves, because otherwise it stays all locked up in our bodies and our minds forever. We take our stories with us to our grave, and, you know, they keep presenting again and again and again for us to heal. And I just want to say too, it's never too late to heal. You can come to this when your grandchildren are having babies and still heal from your birth. Like, it's never too late to turn up and have your story heard. And there's never like the right time. Like, it's often people put it off. People get really nervous turning up. I really acknowledge all of that, but we go super gently. We only go as fast as all as part of you wants to go, because it is all about keeping you safe. We are extra nurturing and nourishing for women and postpartum people in those early months, weeks and months. So sometimes people can't get into me, but they can get into my team a lot earlier. But we're super gentle in that time. But there's no ideal time. You just come whenever it feels right for you. You never missed the boat. Yeah, you're so worthy of being heard. So my team has incredible availability and can see you online anywhere in the world. So I've just opened up my bookings again for a couple of months, but my team have more availability in March and April if you want to be heard now.
Oh, thank you so much, B, for bringing that. And if you're interested in birth debriefing, B's website, coronflorastore.com.au. And if you want to become trained in how to offer birth debriefing, motheration.au is where B's training mentorship will be there. And if you want to get on the mailing list for this podcast, melaniethemidwife.com. That has been this episode of The Great Birth Rebellion, and we will see you again in next week's episode.
See you.
Hi, friends.
Thanks for listening with us today. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast on your favourite podcast platform and join our mailing list at melaniethemidwife.com. Mel sends out weekly emails with access to all the evidence we use in this podcast. You can find out more about Mel at melaniethemidwife.com and find out more about me, Bea, at coramflor.com.au. We can't wait to bring you next week's episode of The Great Birth Rebellion.
Yeah! Yeah! All right.